This is Audible.
Simon & Schuster Audio presents Rush Revere and the American Revolution, Time Travel Adventures with Exceptional Americans by Rush Limbaugh. Read by the author.
Forward. We are fortunate to live in the greatest country on earth. The United States of America is truly the land of the free and the home of the brave. America is an inspiration, a dream for people all over the world. But how did America happen? How did it come to be? Why are we free? I often think about these questions and how simply amazing it was that a small group of patriots could develop a contagious plan that would rally those with the early American spirit to stand up and fight for their independence from Great Britain. Early patriot heroes like Paul Revere and George Washington were courageous and daring and willing to fight for a cause that was far bigger than themselves. They advanced the mission of the original pilgrims who voyaged across rough waters in pursuit of freedom and brought to life a yearning of people since the beginning of time. Despite the very long odds and being underdogs from the beginning, the American patriots did not give up. They unified, stood back up every time they were knocked down, and maintained an unwavering belief in God. Today, we have patriots serving in our country and around the world as members of our armed forces. We are eternally grateful to these men and women and their families who put their lives on the line every single day to maintain the culture and freedoms that those who came before us worked so valiantly to achieve. Sit back, get ready to explore this incredible period in history. Rush Revere and his lovable sidekick Liberty are ready to take you on an adventure to meet the American underdogs. Prologue. What are we looking for again? Asked Liberty as we walked down the dark cobblestone street. We wouldn't be looking for anything if you had time jumped to the right location, I said while forcing a smile. Now don't get me wrong. I felt truly fortunate to have a special horse like Liberty. However, tonight his time jumping skills were just a little off. I stopped walking and glanced around the unfamiliar street, trying to decipher if we were heading north or south. I sighed, took off my hat, ran my fingers through my hair. I looked up and marveled at the midnight sky filled with billions of stars. As I tried to find the North Star and get my bearings, I had the strange sensation that we were being watched. I heard something behind us and quickly turned in the direction we had come. Did you hear something? I asked. If you mean my stomach, yeah, Liberty replied. I pushed the feeling aside and continued walking up the street. Liberty clarified. Just for the record, I heard you say, Boston, the Old South Church, April 18th, 1775, 9:30 p.m. So that's where I jumped to. So is that why we're now walking to the old North Church, I asked? And through a very dark part of Boston, I might add? It's a good thing I didn't say we're going to the North Pole because you might have heard the South Pole instead, and that would have been an even farther walk. I know it was a simple mistake on Liberty's part, but I had planned to meet Robert Newman, a patriot and caretaker of the old North Church, tonight at approximately 10 o'clock. Hopefully we hadn't missed him. I'm just saying, I heard you say Old South Church, Liberty said. Maybe you were thinking north, but you accidentally said south. It's like asking you to please pass the salt when I really meant for you to pass the pepper. You don't even like pepper, I reminded him. Remember, pepper makes you sneeze. Oh, boy, you shouldn't have made me think of pepper. Oh, because now I feel like I have to sneeze. Oh, Liberty twitched his nose back and forth and shook his head. I didn't make you think of Pepper. You're the one who first mentioned Pepper. Liberty sniffed, closed his eyes, shook his head. But it was too late. Like a shotgun full of snot, Liberty blasted. The sound echoed off the brick buildings and down the cobblestone street. I turned to Liberty and said, "Bless you." Out of the corner of my eye, I could have sworn I saw a dark shadow crossing to our side of the street. There, I turned and pointed. By the time Liberty turned around, the shadow had dissolved into a sea of black.
"Somebody's a little jumpy tonight," Liberty said.
Was I seeing things? Maybe the sights and sounds of 18th century Boston were playing tricks on me. Seriously, I think we're being followed.
"Are you trying to spook me?"
Liberty asked suspiciously. Without answering, I reached over to his saddlebag and grabbed my pepper spray.
"Did you just pull out the pepper spray?"
Liberty inquired. "I'm just being cautious," I stated.
"Pepper spray?"
Liberty said.
"You keep making me think of pepper. Ah, sheesh! You're worse than allergy season."
"You want a Dr. Pepper?" I winked. I couldn't help myself. And Liberty sneezed two more times. "History's waiting," I said. "We need to hurry." A whole 20 seconds passed before Liberty asked,
"What was I talking about before I sneezed? Oh, yeah, the old South Church."
I groaned. Look, I told you we're going to the old North Church. They're both in Boston, but they're two different buildings. I took out my smartphone and I pushed the icon for the compass app. But I forgot. There weren't any satellites in the 18th century.
Oh, rats.
No service. Now let's just keep walking.
Gee, somebody's grumpy. Actually, somebody's Mr. Grumpy Pants,
Liberty said. If I'm grumpy, it's because we're late and we're lost.
And I think that really tall, pointy steeple is what we've been looking for, said Liberty.
I turned to see where Liberty was looking, and sure enough, the silhouette of a steeple loomed just across the street.
That's it, I cheered. The old North Church.
It was an impressive brick building with a majestic white steeple that rose up into the night sky like an angel raising its sword for battle. As I turned back to Liberty, my smile quickly faded as I saw the shadow of a man in the near distance by a large oak tree. "There," I pointed. "See him by the tree to the far left?" Liberty turned and looked where I was pointing. The shadow man just stood there, watching us. Liberty inched backward to stand behind me and said,
"Oh, that's creepy. Why is he staring at us?"
"I don't know," I said, "but there's one way to find out." I leapt up onto Liberty's saddle and spurred him forward. As we bolted toward our watcher in the woods, Liberty said,
"I have a bad feeling about this."
More trees came into view as we raced closer. "At which tree did you see him behind?" Liberty asked. "I thought you knew where he was going," I replied. The shadows seemed to disappear into the night. Suddenly a voice called from the shadows near the church.
"Mr. Revere," the voice said. "Over here!"
The stranger, who looked to be in his early 20s, stepped out from the shadows but did not speak. "Robert Newman?" I whispered as we walked to where the man stood.
"Yes. Good evening, sir," Newman replied, waiting for me to speak.
"Well, thank you for meeting me, Robert," I said. "Paul Revere asked that I meet you here to help you and the Sons of Liberty. I'll assist you in any way I can tonight. Have you brought the lanterns?"
"Yes, sir. I hid the lanterns in..."
And just then two branches crackled, sounding as if someone was walking closely nearby. "Let's be careful," I said. "Somebody might hear us. The king's spies are everywhere, and the redcoats are out tonight. They patrol the streets and could pass the church at any moment."
"My apologies. You are right," whispered Newman. "I hid the lanterns in a closet inside the church. The other patriots will meet us there to help put them in place."
"Well done," I said softly. "Paul will be proud."
"Yes, he told me earlier this evening that General Gage will secretly send the regulars from Boston tonight to capture Patriots Samuel Adams and John Hancock in Lexington, Newman said as we stood in the darkness. Of course, I knew that when Newman said regulars, he meant regular British soldiers, the King's professional army who wore the bright red coats. If the British Army could capture these two American leaders, it would be a real blow to the revolution, I thought to myself. We must warn our fellow patriots across the river in Charlestown, even now. They are watching the tower of the Old North Church for our signal. We decided that if the King's Army left Boston by land to invade our other towns, we would light one lantern as the sign. But if we discovered his army was leaving Boston by sea, crossing the Charles River, we would light two lanterns, Newman said. I smiled and said, one if by land, two if by sea. Correct, he answered. Come, Mr. Revere, said Newman. I can get us into the church. We walked briskly to the front of the Old North Church. The light flickering from a nearby lamppost cast our ghostly shadows upon the white wooden doors. Newman looked left and right as if expecting to see someone. Newman quickly slipped his hand into his coat pocket and pulled out a large metal key that he inserted into a thin metal hole below the door handle. A loud click sounded as he turned the key. He leaned into the door, and it slowly swung open. Newman entered first. I turned to Liberty and whispered, "You'll need to stay out here. Try to warn us if there's trouble."
"You got it, Captain," Liberty said confidently. "Going into stealth mode in 3, 2, 1.
Liberty took a deep breath, disappeared into thin air. His supernatural talents amazed me. I took one last glance toward the street before entering the church. Did I see a shadow figure move behind a tree? Was it one of the king's spies? It was too dark to tell. I quickly slipped into the church and shut the heavy door. "Allow me to lock the door behind us. The other patriots are already inside," Newman said. This time the click of the lock echoed inside the large chapel. "I'm afraid I can't see anything," I said. "I'll return in a moment after I retrieve the lanterns and candles," Newman said. I stood in a drafty, dark room and listened to boots walking across the floor. A door creaked open, and I heard the soft click of metal against metal. Before long, Newman's footfalls returned. "Take my arm, and I will lead you to the stairwell," said Newman. "But first, hang one of these lanterns around your neck with this leather strap." My hands groped in the dark until I touched metal, glass, and leather. Then Newman led me to the stairwell. My fingers traced the walls as we started to climb. The creaking stairs were uncomfortably loud under the circumstances. Inside my head, I counted 10 steps, then 20, then 30. After 100 steps, we paused. My legs burned as I tried to catch my breath. Climbing so many stairs was a real workout. "We must continue," Newman said. I nodded and continued counting. 110 steps, 120 steps, 150 steps. Certainly we were high into the church tower. 4 more steps, and we arrived at the platform at the top of the stairs. It didn't seem as pitch black from up here. I noticed the shape of a ladder in the center of the platform. I assumed it led to the topmost window in the steeple. I could faintly see Newman pull several objects from his pocket. "What are those?" I asked. "Flint and steel and a tinderbox," he said. Newman stroked the flint with his steel, and before long a stream of sparks sprang onto the dry tinder. Gently he blew the glowing embers into a flame and lighted the candles. He placed a candle into each of the 2 square metal lanterns with clear glass lenses. "Now the space at the top is too narrow for the 2 of us. Climb up behind me with your lantern, and then pass it up to me when I get to the top," Newman said. The ladder creaked under our weight. Rung after rung, we climbed. We passed large bells that hung from great wooden beams. Suddenly Newman stopped above me. Was there something wrong? Was there someone up in the tower? I have reached the topmost window. Hand me your lantern, Newman said. Relieved, I lifted my lantern and handed it to Newman. For only a few seconds, he held both lanterns out the northwest window in the direction of Charlestown. I stretched my neck to see the flickering candles burning side by side and remembered the sign, "To if by sea." "We did it!" Newman exclaimed. "Well done," I said a bit too loudly. My heart was pounding with the excitement of the moment. "Hurry! We must descend quickly," said Newman, who had already extinguished the candles. From the top, I could see a group of redcoats heading this way. I don't know if they saw the lanterns. Maybe a spy saw us enter the church and report us. Either way, we better move fast. Newman handed me the second lantern, and I put the leather strap around my neck. Without the candlelight, it was uncomfortably dark. As I descended the ladder, my foot slipped, and I fell to the side. One hand barely grabbed the outside edge of the ladder, but the other swung out to the darkness, desperate to find something to stabilize myself. My hand pushed up against something metal. I could feel the heavy object swing outward with the force of my weight, and suddenly I realized it was one of the bells. I stayed my hand to force back the bell that instinctively tried to swing back inward. I cringed at the thought of the sound the bell would make if the clapper struck the metal. As the bell came to a resting stop, the clapper barely tapped the side, and I exhaled with relief. With my left arm, I pulled myself back to the ladder and tightly gripped both sides. "That was close," Newman said. We carefully made our way down to the top platform and then quickly descended the 154 stairs. Newman returned the lanterns to the closet, but upon approaching the front doors of the church, we heard voices coming from just outside. "I tell you, I saw someone enter the church," said a gruff voice. "You also said you saw a horse vanish into thin air," shouted a second voice. "We're the king's soldiers, not puppets for a spy and a drunkard." "But I tell you, the horse was right here, and then it just disappeared," the spy said. "Did it have wings?" laughed a soldier. "Yeah, maybe it was Pegasus. And I bet Hercules was the guy he saw enter the church," said another. Sounded like all the soldiers were laughing now.
"Hurry, this is our chance," whispered Newman. "We can escape out the church through a window."
We ran through the chapel, climbed up on a bench near a wooden altar. Within minutes, we were up and through the window and standing in the shadows. "I must return home before anyone notices I'm missing," said Newman. "Godspeed, Rush Revere." As Newman disappeared into the shadows, I looked for Liberty.
"Well, it's about time you showed up," said Liberty. You think the Patriots across the river saw your lanterns? Was the message sent?"
"There you are," yelled the man with the gruff voice.
Liberty was so spooked by the stranger that he screamed like a girl. The startled stranger nearly jumped out of his boots. Apparently the man had never heard a horse scream before. His eyes darted back and forth between us. It was just enough time for me to grab the pepper spray and blast it in the man's eyes.
"Ah!"
the man screamed. He covered his eyes with his black-gloved hands, stumbled backward. His black cloak and jet-black hair made him the perfect spy as he disappeared into the blackness.
"Hey, you were right. Someone was following us," said Liberty. "He saw me disappear in front of the church, and then reported you to those British soldiers."
"It might be better if we're not here when he gets his sight back," I exclaimed.
"Sounds good to me," Liberty agreed.
I hoisted myself up on the Liberty saddle and said, "Let's jump back to the future."
"North or south?" said Liberty.
"Very funny," I said.
"Rush, rush, rushing from history," Liberty bellowed. A small, swirling vortex of purple and gold appeared before us. Liberty galloped toward it as it grew to twice his size. From the corner of my eye, I saw the spy trailing us in the distance, a black glove still covering one eye. Right before we jumped through the time portal, the spy shouted,
"I know your secret! I will watch for you! I will find you!"
Chapter 1.
You realize we're headed into a military base, said Liberty, a quizzical expression on his face.
I nodded. Yes, this is the place.
The sign over the gatehouse read Marine Corps Base.
You're not signing me up for the cavalry, are you? Liberty asked. I mean, I would look good with a 5-star general riding in my saddle, but what about our time-traveling missions to discover the truth about American history? I mean, not to brag or anything, but you sort of need me.
Yes, Liberty, I said with a smile, I need you. I'm not enlisting you to join the cavalry. Besides, soldiers aren't fighting mounted on horseback these days. Instead, they ride jets and tanks.
Whew, said Liberty.
So, is this a secret mission? Some kind of covert operation with the Marines?
Wow, how exciting!
Are we getting sent overseas? Will our mission have a code name?
Oh, can we call it Operation Liberty? And not just because it's my name.
Or maybe we need something more abstract like Operation Butterfly Princess.
Too girly?
Okay. How about Operation Mashed Potatoes? I mean, who doesn't like mashed potatoes, am I right?
I laughed at the way Liberty's brain worked.
First things first, I said. I'll fill you in on all the details after I speak to the guards.
Got it, Captain, Liberty whispered like he was in commando mode, ready to cross behind enemy lines.
Awaiting your orders, sir.
I rolled my eyes at his dramatics. Honestly, I didn't have the heart to tell him that I doubted the guards would let him on base, but it was worth a try.
We approached the guardhouse, and two guards stared at me with a penetrating glare.
Their camouflage service uniforms looked intimidating, especially with a gun that hung from each of their black utility belts. I got the feeling that not many visitors arrived on horseback and dressed like an early American patriot. I said, "Hello, I'm Rush Revere, and I have an appointment at the base cafeteria."
A guard with a ponytail worn in a tight bun beneath her cap said, "I'll need to see some identification, sir." She was all business. I quickly handed her my driver's license. Since Liberty and I'd been together, I couldn't remember the last time I drove. Why use a car when you have a time-traveling horse? The Marine turned sharply and stepped into the guardhouse. In a few seconds, she returned and said, "Sir, your name is on the approved guest list and your identification checks out." She handed back my driver's license. "However, your costume is highly questionable." Liberty softly snickered. He still sounded like a horse, but it was obvious he was amused by the guard's comment. Would they really deny me entrance into the base because of my colonial breeches and stockings? I tried not to sound too defensive, and I said, "As I mentioned, I'm a history teacher, and this colonial outfit's just my way of engaging my students. And now that you mention it, I'm sure I look..." The guard cut me off and said, "Sir, we have a dress code on base. We wouldn't let someone dressed up like a clown just waltz in here." Liberty was really enjoying himself now. He huffed and wheezed, shook his head as he tried to choke back his laughter. The guard glanced at Liberty and asked, "Is your horse all right? Sounds like he's got something caught in his throat."
"Not to worry. He's probably just hacking up a hairball," I teased.
The guard was not amused. I smiled and said, "That was a joke, of course. Well, anyway, I'm here to visit a student of mine who lives on base. His mother invited me and felt it was very important that I see him." The guard paused and then said, "One moment, sir." She returned to talk to the other Marines in the guardhouse. I quickly whispered to Liberty,
"You are not helping matters."
"Sorry," Liberty replied, "but I'm curious. Do you do birthday parties and bar mitzvahs?" Again, Liberty shook with laughter as the Marine returned from the guardhouse.
"Sir, we will make an exception for you," said the guard, "but we will need to pat you down before you enter the base."
"Whew," I sighed. "Not a problem. Thank you very much. However, I can't let you enter with your horse. Base protocol." I could literally feel the air rush out of Liberty. I couldn't blame him.
I tried not to let my disappointment show too much and replied, I understand, no worries. My visit on base won't be long. I'll tie him up to that tree over there and return shortly. I turned Liberty around and he sluggishly walked across the street to a tree at the side of the entrance.
You realize how humiliating this is, right?
Liberty mumbled. I'm truly sorry, Liberty, but I got a call from Principal Sherman. He told me that Cam's mom wanted to meet me today and that it was important. I have no idea what it's about, but I told him I would help any way I could. We stood by the tree to talk for a second.
Oh, well, now I'm worried. I hope it's not too serious. You think it's too serious? I mean, Cam's a total prankster. You think he got in trouble? Wait, why would she want to meet you?
Ha, if I knew that, I would have told you. Just because I'm tying you to a tree doesn't mean I don't trust you, I said with a smile. All right, just this once, Liberty consented. I'll stay here. Liberty was taking this a lot better than I anticipated. I looked him straight in the eye, said, Liberty, you understand that you need to stay out here, right? We both know you could easily turn invisible and sneak onto the base without anybody seeing you. Don't think I haven't thought about that.
What? Liberty said, sounding shocked. Well, the idea never crossed my mind. Right, I said. And I bet you also haven't thought about food all day.
Liberty huffed. Well, I didn't until you mentioned you were going to the cafeteria to eat. Look, I said, I promise I'll bring you back something. But we can't afford to have anyone see you on base. Understand? Seriously. I could get into real trouble if those guards find out you're inside.
Yes, yes, of course I understand, Liberty said. Even though I'm a highly trained, time-traveling special operative who feels severely underappreciated, I'll accept the unusual circumstances. And, of course, I would never want to get you in trouble.
He dipped his head and raised his eyes like a puppy waiting for a bone.
Good, I said. I promise. I'll be back as soon as I can. It really shouldn't take long.
Here, I brought you something to help pass the time, and I pulled out a couple of pieces of bubble gum, unwrapped them, and tossed them into Liberty's mouth.
Mmm, thank you, said Liberty as he started to chew.
Just try not to blow big bubbles. We wouldn't want anyone to see your highly trained special operative skills, I winked. Plus, remember what happened the last time in 1765 when your gum got stuck in the hair of that British redcoat soldier, got us all in trouble. Liberty chewed and replied, no worries. There aren't any of those mean British soldiers for more than 200 years from here, he winked.
True, I said, but there are Marines less than 200 yards away, so please behave yourself.
You can count on me, Captain, he said with a grin.
After getting patted down by the guards, I found my way to the cafeteria. I entered the doors and noticed plenty of tables and chairs. It was after lunch hour, but there were a few Marines and a few families still eating or talking. I made my way over to an empty table and waited for Cam's mom to arrive. A woman with brown eyes and a tan complexion entered the cafeteria doors. She wore a neatly pressed business suit and several thin bracelets on her wrist. Her dark hair hung neatly around her shoulders. When she smiled, I immediately recognized the resemblance to her son.
"You must be Professor Revere," she said.
I took off my hat and replied, "Yes, I am, but I'm only known as Mr. Revere to my students. Please call me Rush." We shook hands as she eyed my outfit.
"Cam told me that you usually dress like you're going to a Mardi Gras or Halloween party. He was right."
"Oh, yeah," I said, almost blushing. "Well, I consider it my history uniform."
"I think it looks very dashing," she said, smiling. "By the way, I'm Danielle. Thank you for coming to the base to meet me. I'm sure this is out of your way."
"No, it's my pleasure. Anything to help Cam. He's a great student," I said. "He has a real gift for expressing himself. He's a great speaker. Sense of humor is contagious." I smiled at the memory of the fake eye prank he pulled on his first day.
"Well, he loves your class," she replied. "You've literally made history come alive for him. I mean, he's always liked history, but you seem to take it to a whole different level.
Well, I'm glad to know that, I said sincerely.
Now, I don't know how much Principal Sherman told you, but Cam's father was sent overseas to Afghanistan by the Marines last month. Cam took it really hard. He hid inside his closet right before his dad left so that they didn't even get to say goodbye. Cam just doesn't get why his dad had to go.
Danielle paused and took a deep breath.
Cam was always such a wonderful kid. He was always so happy and kind. But ever since his dad left, Cam's been, well, let's just say he's not Mr. Wonderful. He's just not himself anymore, Rush. And Cam means everything to me. It breaks my heart to see him angry and hurt so much. I know his father didn't show it, but I'm sure he felt sad that Cam wasn't around to send him off. The thing is, Cam loves his father very much, and I know he misses him. But he's put up this wall. He won't let anyone talk to him about it. But he needs to talk about it. Cam needs to understand why his dad chose to become a soldier. I want Cam to understand the sacrifice his father is making for our family and this country.
Danielle resisted the urge to cry. Finally had to wipe away a tear.
I just don't know what to do with him. I've considered sending Cam to live with his grandparents in Atlanta, but I don't know if that would make things better or worse for him.
Danielle paused, and finally she said, The thing is, I think you're the one person who might be able to help. He talks about you and your class all the time. I'm so glad I chose to send him to Manchester Middle School. I almost enrolled him at the school on base, but I ran into Principal Sherman at a fundraiser, and he convinced me to send Cam to Manchester.
I nodded. It's a wonderful school with some amazing students.
And that's what Cam says about you. Amazing. He says no one's a better teacher. In fact, he talks like he personally knows Patrick Henry from the 18th century, she said with a laugh. Seriously, he says that he and Patrick Henry are tight.
I laughed as well, and I said, Well, if you're going to be friends with somebody, it might as well be an exceptional American, right?
True, Danielle said, smiling. But I think he also feels close to you. In fact, you're the closest thing he has to a father figure right now. Maybe that's why he feels connected to you. Anyway, I thought you might have some ideas on how to help him.
Cam is a great kid. I'm not sure what I can do, but I'll give it some thought.
In fact, where is Cam now?
I think he's at the obstacle course, not too far from here. Would you like me to show you? She asked.
I could tell it was more of an invitation than a question.
Absolutely, I said. It would be great to see Cam again.
Danielle smiled and sighed at the same time. I knew she hoped that I had some magic wand that could make things right with Cam. I wished that I did, but Cam's problems were serious. What was I going to do? It must be so difficult for Cam being without his father.
As we approached the obstacle course, I saw several kids, maybe 15 or 20, who were taunting and shouting at two boys in the middle of their circle. They looked like an angry mob surrounding two kids in a brawl.
Danielle and I looked at each other at the same time and started racing toward the commotion. Sure enough, Cam was in the middle with another boy who looked much larger and a couple of years older. Behind Cam stood a heavy-set kid with rosy red cheeks, sweating. He looked petrified, choked out.
"Don't mess with him, Cam. There's nothing you can do. He'll beat you to a pulp."
Cam said, "Billy, stop picking on Ed, or else."
"Or else what?" replied the bigger kid named Billy, who looked like a bully. He had a butch haircut, and his fists seemed the size of sledgehammers.
"You gonna call your daddy?"
"Oh, that's right. He's not here anymore to save you."
The mention of his dad made Cam grit his teeth. I could tell Danielle was ready to charge into the middle of the circle, so I quickly put a hand on her shoulder. I whispered, "Let's see how Cam handles this." Reluctantly, Danielle nodded. Without taking his eyes off Billy, Cam whispered something to the chubby boy named Edward, who then took off running. Cam stood as tall as he could, said, "I don't need my dad to save me. I don't need anyone."
Cam brought his fists up in front of him. Bring it! I've been looking for a punching bag.
Are you threatening me, punk?
Asked Billy with a menacing grin.
You want to mess with me?
Why? Asked Cam. Your face already looks messed up.
You're dead meat, said Billy, who stepped forward and swung his arm at Cam's head.
Thankfully, Cam was faster and ducked out of the way. Size didn't seem to intimidate Cam as he dove into his larger opponent, swept his lumbering feet out from under him. The Goliath-sized kid landed with a thud, and Cam jumped on him like a lion pouncing on its prey. The bigger kid blocked a punch and then shoved Cam off. Cam rolled once, sprang back onto his feet as quick as a cat.
I'm going to stop this, Danielle said firmly. I'll be right back.
She disappeared behind a building.
That's strange, I thought. I wondered if I should step in and break up the fight. Would that help Cam or not?
He certainly wasn't backing down from Billy, and he made a conscious effort to step in and protect another kid. I decided to wait and see. The boys in the circle continued yelling. Some were cheering for Billy, some were encouraging Cam. Billy took a couple more swings at Cam's head, but Cam pulled back just in the nick of time.
Get him, Cam, yelled a kid on Cam's side of the circle.
Yeah, Cam, taunted Billy. Come on, Cam. Get me, Cam. Is that even your real name? Cam's probably short for camera. In fact, you should take a picture of yourself looking like a dork.
Cam didn't miss a beat.
Replied, good one, Billy. I'll bet your name is short for Billy Goat because you smell like one.
Billy charged Cam at full speed. Cam backpedaled, but the circle of onlookers blocked his escape, and he ended up stumbling and falling onto his backside. Several boys scattered as Billy towered over his prey.
Now I'm going to teach you a lesson, Billy said threateningly. The underdog never wins.
Cam was in real danger. I started to run, but realized I wouldn't get to him in time to help, and just as Billy leaned over to punish Cam, something hit Billy in the back of the head.
What was that? Billy exclaimed as he stood up and turned to see who dared interfere with his fight.
No one was there. In fact, all the other boys were lined up on either side of the fight. No one had been standing behind him.
Who threw that? Billy yelled as he reached over his shoulder to feel the back of his head.
As he pulled away his hand, a mess of sticky, pink goo stretched out from his hair.
What idiot threw gum into my hair? Screamed Billy.
Gum?
Where would a wad of chewed-up gum come from?
And it dawned on me. It had to be Liberty. Without notice, Cam kicked his foot at the back of Billy's legs. Knees buckled, and the colossal brute went down hard like a giant tree being cut down. Cam scrambled to his feet. With an uncontrolled temper, he prepared to jump on Billy again. Suddenly, a blast of water hit Cam in the chest, and he stumbled away. Billy was blasted as well. As he rolled over to get up, he discovered the dirt had turned into a mud pit. Billy's body was covered in mud, not to mention the gum stuck to his hair, face, and shirt. He really did look like a mess.
Cam yelled, Mom, what are you doing?
I turned to see Danielle with a garden hose on full blast. The boys scattered in all directions.
This isn't over, Camera,
said Billy as he left a trail of muddy footprints behind him. Finally, Danielle released the handle and the water stopped.
I can take care of myself, Cam yelled.
Danielle replied firmly, Do not yell at your mother. If your father were here,
well, he's not, shouted Cam. Remember, he left us. He doesn't care about us.
Cameron, you know that's not true, Danielle exclaimed.
I don't know that. I'm out of here, Cam said, walking away with his chest up.
He was shaking his head.
Cam!
Danielle yelled, but Cam did not turn around. Do you mind if I have a talk with him? I asked. Danielle nodded.
Cam, wait up!
I yelled, chasing him. I put a hand on his shoulder. He shrugged my hand off.
Mr. Revere, I don't need to have a talk with you. I don't care if my mom or Principal Sherman or whoever sent you.
I just want to be alone, Cam said, still walking.
I get it. I know what's happening.
Your mom told me about your dad.
You don't know anything, Cam turned to me, his eyes misty and angry. I looked at him closely, took a deep breath. No, I suppose you're right. I don't know, but I want to. Will you help me understand?
Nope. He smiled a little bit, actually more like a smirk.
Poor kid, I thought. He doesn't know what to do. Suddenly it occurred to me. I don't know much, but I do know this. One thing I can do is give him an adventure. Maybe that'll take his mind off things.
Cam, I have an idea. Remember when we time-traveled back to 1765 and met Patrick Henry?
Of course, duh, Cam said. You think I don't have a memory or what?
Come on, buddy.
I was trying not to be frustrated with him. I smiled softly and continued. We had a great time.
What do you think? Want to go on another adventure in American history?
Whatever, Cam said with a shrug. And then he turned again and ran away. I walked back to Danielle, who was standing with her arms crossed.
I'm sorry, Rush. He's never been like this. He was always the sweetest boy, she said.
I understand this must be hard for all of you, but I have an idea. I'm going to ask Principal Sherman if I can teach a summer class. I think at least I can get him thinking about something else. Also, it may keep him away from that bratty kid.
That sounds like a wonderful idea. Thank you.
We shook hands, and I turned toward the cafeteria. I knew I had to pay off Liberty with a little snack when I got back. Hopefully, he was where I left it. As I walked, I called Principal Sherman. Lucky for me, he always has his cell phone. I asked him about the whole summer class idea. I passed through the front gate, exited the military base looking for Liberty. I was certain I left him tied to the tree across the street. Did the tree move? Where was he?
Liberty, I called.
No answer.
Where could that horse have...
I'm right here, said Liberty, panting.
Where were you? Why are you out of breath? I asked, suspicious.
Oh, yes. I am a bit winded, Liberty confessed. It's because I was holding my breath. I was tired of all the people staring and gawking at me in their cars while entering or leaving the base. I felt like shouting, this is not... the zoo, people, move it along. Sheesh.
I narrowed my eyes as I pondered his explanation.
You don't believe me? Asked Liberty.
Oh, I'm sure that's part of it, I said, but something tells me I'm not getting the full story. Weren't you chewing a piece of gum?
That old stuff, Liberty huffed, I spit it out ages ago.
And you didn't enter the base?
What kind of question is that? Liberty guffawed.
Well, it's a pretty simple question, actually, I stated. Liberty looked at me like I was thick-headed.
He said, we both know that Marines are required to keep the details of their missions highly confidential. They are sworn to secrecy, and they live by code of honor to never divulge information that could compromise the mission.
You haven't answered my question, I said.
And I see you brought me back something from the cafeteria, he said, eyeing my carrot cake. But you can eat the frosting.
Ugh. All I want's the carroty stuff.
I simply shook my head and smiled as I peeled back the plastic wrap, broke off a piece of cake without frosting and fed it to Liberty. While he was preoccupied eating his cake, I prodded further.
I'm just relieved that Cam didn't get hurt during that fight.
I know, right?
Liberty said as he stopped mid-chew.
What fight?
Liberty, I scolded.
And when were you going to tell me that we were teaching a history course during the summer? Don't I get a choice?
I thought we were a team. How are we ever going to trust each other if promises are being made with fingers crossed behind the back? Liberty sighed, then added,
not to worry. I've already forgiven you. But seriously, the next time you promise to give someone a shot in the arm of real American history, I think you should consult the guy who can get us there. That's all I'm saying.
And just how long were you eavesdropping on our conversation? I asked.
Shh. Remember, code of honor. He tried to zip his lips with his hoof. I shook my head. Well, Liberty, I spoke with Principal Sherman on my way back here, and I have some good news. We will be teaching a summer class with our old-time traveling crew. Woo-hoo! Liberty jumped and kicked with his back hooves. One of the guards looked on with suspicion. Chapter 2. It was the first day of summer school. I had butterflies in my stomach as Liberty and I arrived at Manchester Middle School. Would my time-traveling crew show up? How would Cam react? As we walked into the school, Liberty held his breath and disappeared. His skills never ceased to amaze me. The hallway was empty as we walked into Classroom 5. Liberty! Freedom shouted as he reappeared. She jumped up to give him a bear hug as he snuggled back. Cam barely nodded at us and then turned back and slouched in his chair. As we waited for Tommy, Liberty decided to have some fun with a Jeopardy-style quiz challenge. After the first couple of questions, Cam was still not very responsive. Question number 3 is for Cam. No pressure. But Freedom is winning 2-0. Liberty cleared his throat. What exceptional American said, "Give me liberty or give me death"? Oh, brother, he definitely knows this one, Freedom said, her hand surrendering. Cam yawned. Was it the Three Musketeers? Liberty raised an eyebrow. Seriously? I don't think Cam's trying very hard. Freedom shoved his shoulder. You know the answers, Patrick Henry. He's your hero. Liberty piped in. Remember, we time-traveled to 1765 Virginia to meet Patrick Henry. Cam got arrested and handcuffed by the British Redcoats for disorderly conduct. That was crazy. Cam shrugged his shoulders. Liberty tallied the score. Freedom now has 3 points, and Cam has a big, fat goose egg. Now, of course, if it was a golden goose egg, then you'd be rich. And if you owned a goose that laid golden eggs, then you'd be really rich. And if you owned a flock of geese that laid golden eggs... I smiled while listening to Liberty's random thoughts. I was glad to be back at Manchester Middle School, even if it was summertime. I stood by the open window as a light breeze drifted into the classroom and gently blew the American flag. I checked the clock on the wall again and felt anxious. Tommy was almost 10 minutes late. Liberty continued. Of course, if you had an elephant that laid a golden egg, well, that would be just weird. I'm sorry to interrupt your insightful conversation, I said, but has anyone heard from Tommy? He's awfully late. I bet he slept in, said Freedom. Knowing Tommy, he's probably hibernating. It is summer vacation, after all. Both Freedom and Cam looked casual and comfortable. They both wore shorts and short-sleeve shirts. Instead of the feather I had often seen Freedom wear, she had her hair pulled back into a ponytail. Cam was slumped in his chair with his arms folded. He yawned again and said, "Yeah, we were gaming at his house late last night. I'd still be sleeping, too, but my mom threatened to bring the drill sergeant to wake me up." He grumbled, "Seriously, she doesn't pull any punches when it comes to getting me up for school." Liberty gasped. "Are you saying your mother punches you on a bed? Wow, she's really strict." "No, it means she doesn't beat around the bush," Cam said grumpily. "You have bushes in your bedroom? Boy, you must live in the outback," said Liberty. "No, I just mean my mom gets right to the point. She doesn't blow smoke." "Well, I don't blame her," Liberty replied. "Smoking? I mean, that's a really bad habit. It's a leading cause of lung cancer." Cam pulled his phone from his pocket. "Hey, I just got a text from Tommy. He says, sorry, I accidentally slept in. Tell Mr. Revere he better go without me. Don't have too much fun." "Well, that's too bad," I said. "I'm afraid Tommy will miss out on an exciting adventure today. But I want to thank you both for making the effort to come this morning." "Well, thanks for inviting us, Mr. Revere," said Freedom, beaming. "I mean, this is way better than doing chores." Freedom turned to Cam expecting him to say something. Instead, he just nodded with his arms folded. "So, will it just be Freedom and me?" Cam asked. "Yes, only those who've time-traveled before," I said with a wink. Between the three of them, our time-traveling adventurers had landed on the Mayflower and met the Pilgrims and Native Americans at the first Thanksgiving. We met Ben Franklin and King George in London and witnessed the Boston Tea Party. We had even seen fights and angry crowds fighting against the stamp tax and saw Samuel Adams get the crowd going. Our next adventure would be even more exciting. "Uh-oh. Does that mean Elizabeth is coming?" Cam inquired. "I hope not," Freedom said softly. "I mean, I don't mean to sound rude. It's just that..." Freedom was too nice to say what she really thought, so Cam finished her sentence. "It's just that Elizabeth is a power-hungry, stuck-up, snobbish diva who tries to make everyone around her feel inferior." He looked around to give Tommy a high five, but then realized he wasn't there. Elizabeth is a student at Manchester Middle School and the daughter of Principal Sherman. She knew about liberty and time traveling and tried to befriend King George when we visited 18th century England. Let's just say she isn't the best behaved girl in the world. Freedom blushed. I wasn't going to use those exact words. I smiled and said, "No worries, Freedom. Elizabeth won't be attending. Her family is spending a chunk of the summer on the coast. Of course, after the stunt she pulled trying to leak information to King George III, I'm not sure I trust her just yet." "Or ever," Freedom mumbled. "Let's head outside. The back of the school will give us more room to time jump," I said. Both students slipped out of their desks, and Liberty opened the classroom door with his teeth. As we walked down the hallway and out of the school, I watched Cam out of the corner of my eye. He shuffled along with his hands in his pockets and his head down. This was definitely not the boy I remember playing pranks in class and always smiling. When we reached the grass behind the school, I thought we should do a little history reminder class to be sure we were all on the same page. Perhaps it would put Cam in a better mood before we time traveled. "Who can tell me what happened when the Pilgrims landed in the New World?" I asked. "I can," Freedom said confidently. "They started to build towns and neighborhoods and grew crops on their land." "Yes, Freedom, you're exactly right," I said, adding the original Pilgrims helped to develop the communities that eventually formed into the 13 colonies. "Do you remember why the Pilgrims wanted to have their own colony?" I asked. "Yes, they wanted to live in a place where they could be free and openly believe in God," Freedom answered immediately after I asked the question. "Well done, Freedom, you're on a roll," I said, smiling. "How about you, Cam?" I prodded. Cam barely lifted his head, said, "Yup, I agree with Freedom." Cam was not making this easy, but I was not going to settle for grunts and attitudes. After the Pilgrims worked very hard to establish the original 13 colonies, they didn't want anyone coming and imposing strict laws that took away their freedom. When the King of England saw the success they were having in their new communities, he thought the land was rightfully his and should be under his control, I said. "Cam," I went on, "do you remember how the king tried to show his power and make the 13 colonies submit to his rule?" I was hoping for more than a yes or no answer from him. Cam lifted his head a little higher and said, "Well, he wanted to show them who's boss by forcing them to submit to tough laws, whether the early Americans liked it or not." I nodded, giving him reassurance he was on the right track. "Like the Stamp Act and taxes," Cam said reluctantly. "Yes, very good. To show his power and try to control the people in the 13 colonies, the king started to impose tough laws and put heavy fees or taxes on a lot of things sold in the colonies, such as tea. American colonists were also forced to take British soldiers into their homes. That's how the Boston Massacre and the Boston Tea Party came to be," I said. "Yes," Freedom said, "I remember the Boston Tea Party. It wasn't really the kind of tea party we used to play at my house. They dumped a bunch of tea crates in the harbor to show the king that people weren't happy with all the fees." Freedom acted out, throwing a box over her head. We spent a few minutes more talking about how the early Americans had no right to vote and how mad they were that the king shut down the port of Boston and stopped political meetings from happening. The tension in the 13 colonies only got worse from that point on, I said. The early Americans were scared their freedoms were being taken away, kind of like when you make a big mistake and know that your parents are going to get really mad.
It's just a matter of time after they find out.
Well, let's go see if we can find out what's happening there now. I reached into Liberty's saddlebag and pulled out a colonial dress, a shawl, stockings, breeches, a linen shirt, and leather shoes, among other items, and distributed them to Cam and Freedom. Whenever we time-traveled, we did our best to blend into the crowd. It kept us safe and let us fit in with the people of that time. I was already wearing my colonial clothing, so I was ready to go.
"Looks like we're going undercover again," Freedom said. She turned to Cam and asked, "Are you as excited as I am?"
"Probably not," Cam said as he began putting his breeches over his shorts. "Is something wrong, Cam? You don't seem like yourself," Freedom asked. "Sorry, I don't know. I guess I'm just tired." After they finished dressing in their new clothing, I ushered them onto Liberty. "We need to time jump to Boston, April 18th, 1775. "At least it'll be spring and not winter," Freedom said. "I almost froze when we first visited the Pilgrims in Plymouth Plantation." "Wait," said Liberty, "April 18th.